Welcome to our deep dive, everybody. Today we're going to get into something that I find super fascinating, and that's flight instruments.
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered how those metal birds stay up in the air? We've got a whole stack of training manuals, diagrams, even some FAA regulations. We're going to try to decode the tech behind how these incredible machines actually work.
Yeah, it really is amazing.
So get ready to go from aviation novice to maybe, hopefully, feeling like you could chat with a pilot about a little more than just the legroom on your next flight.
Yeah, I love how these flight instruments really blend physics and engineering and just human ingenuity. Understanding them not only kind of demystifies the whole idea of flight, but also reveals these incredible forces that are at work every time a plane takes to the sky.
Yeah. So if we're going to unpack all this, where do we even begin? I mean, it's not like driving a car where you can just look out the window and see where you're going.
Exactly. Visual cues, they're just not enough, especially for pilots. So that's where this beautiful thing called the pitot-static system comes in. Think of it as the plane's sensory system. It's constantly feeling and interpreting the air around it.
Okay.
And it's all about pressure. Understanding pressure is key to unlocking how so many of these instruments actually work.
So the plane needs to like feel the air to know what's going on.
Exactly. And it does this by measuring two types of air pressure. You've got static pressure and dynamic pressure.
Okay.
Static pressure is just the pressure of the air just hanging out, not moving. It's like the baseline pressure at a given altitude.
Right.
Dynamic pressure, on the other hand, is created by the plane's movement through the air.
Okay.
You know, picture sticking your hand out a car window. The faster you go, the more force you feel, right?
Yeah.
That's dynamic pressure.
I can picture that. So how does the plane actually capture these pressures? Are we talking like super sensitive barometers or something?
Right. It's clever, but not overly complicated. The plane has two main parts to it, the pitot tube and the static port.
Okay.
The pitot tube is like a little tiny straw, usually positioned on the nose or the wing, and it points right into the oncoming air.
Okay.
And its job is to capture that dynamic pressure we were just talking about.
Gotcha.
The static port is usually flush with the fuselage, and it measures the static, the undisturbed air pressure.
So it's almost like the plane has its own nostrils taking in these different pressures.
That's a great way to put it.
But how do those pressures actually translate into, useful information for the pilot?
Well, that's where the magic of these flight instruments comes in. They use these pressure differences to calculate all that data. We're talking altitude, airspeed, vertical speed. That's all coming from these pressures.
All right. So let's dive into the specifics. Let's start with something I think everyone's probably heard of, the altimeter.
Sure.
How does this seemingly simple instrument accurately tell a pilot how high they are?
Pretty ingenious, actually. Inside the altimeter, there are these sealed wafers that are super sensitive to pressure changes. Think of them like tiny lungs expanding and contracting.
Okay.
As the plane climbs and the air gets thinner, those wafers expand, and that drives a series of gears that turn the needle on the altimeter. And that's what shows the pilot how high they are.
So it's almost like the plane is breathing and its breaths are telling it how high it is.
Yeah, I like that. That's a cool way to think about it.
That's pretty cool. But hold on. Doesn't atmospheric pressure change all the time with the weather and stuff?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that mess up the readings?
Yeah, that's a great point. It brings us to this thing called the Colesman window. Think of it like a little calibration knob on the altimeter. Pilots, they get regular updates on the local barometric pressure, like from air traffic control or weather reports. And then they adjust that Colesman window accordingly so the altimeter stays accurate even if the pressure is fluctuating.
So it's kind of like adjusting your watch to make sure it's showing the right time, even if you've traveled to a different time zone.
Exactly.
But before we move on, you mentioned different types of altitude.
Oh, right.
What's the deal with that? Why can't there just be one simple measurement?
Well, think about it this way. Altitude, it's more than just how high you are above sea level, right?
Right.
It's also about the density of the air, which can change with temperature and humidity.
Okay.
And pilots need to consider these factors, especially during takeoff and landing. That's why they use indicated altitude, which is what they see on the altimeter.
Okay.
And ground speed, which tells them how fast they're moving relative to the ground. This helps them make precise calculations, even with tricky wind conditions.
So it's like knowing your altitude is great for figuring out where you are up in the sky, but knowing your ground speed is essential for figuring out where you're going to touch down.
Exactly. Pilots need both pieces of information to fly safely and efficiently.
Okay, on to another instrument that I'm super curious about, the vertical speed indicator, or VSI.
Yeah.
How does that tell pilots how fast they're climbing or descending?
The VSI, it's all about pressure changes again, but with a little twist. Imagine a sealed container with a tiny calibrated leak.
Okay.
Inside, there's a diaphragm that's exposed to the static pressure, you know, from that static port we talked about earlier.
Okay.
As the plane climbs or descends, that static pressure changes, but that tiny leak creates a little delay in the pressure change inside the container.
Okay.
This difference moves the VSI needle. That's what shows the rate of climb or descent.
So it's like a pressure-sensitive seesaw.
Yeah.
That's reacting to the changing air pressure, and the faster that pressure changes, the faster the needle moves, giving the pilot instant feedback.
Exactly. And that instant feedback helps pilots make smooth adjustments, ensures a comfortable flight for everyone on board.
Speaking of a smooth flight, let's talk about the airspeed indicator. This one seems pretty straightforward. It just tells you how fast the plane is going, right?
Well, you'd think so, but it's more about pressure than speed, really. The airspeed indicator is what's called a differential pressure gauge. Remember those dynamic and static pressures we talked about?
Yeah.
It measures the difference between those two. The bigger the difference, the faster the plane's going.
So it's not measuring speed directly, but it's using pressure difference as a proxy.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Okay.
But why not just measure the speed directly? Is there an advantage to using pressure?
Yeah, absolutely. Using pressure lets the airspeed indicator take into account the density of the air, which affects how the plane flies. This is super important at higher altitudes where the air is thinner.
So the plane doesn't just need to know how fast it's going. It needs to know how that speed translates into actual flight performance in different air densities.
Exactly. And that brings up another important distinction.
Okay.
There's indicated airspeed, which is what pilots see on the instrument. And then there's that ground speed that we talked about before.
Uh-huh.
Ground speed is crucial for things like navigation and figuring out your arrival time. But indicated airspeed helps pilots make those in-the-moment decisions about controlling the plane.
Okay, that clears things up.
Yeah.
But what happens if something goes wrong with the pitot-static system, like a blockage? Isn't that a big deal?
Oh, it can be, definitely. You know, imagine you're a passenger and you see the crew doing that walk around before the flight.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're checking to make sure those little ports are clear, because if that pitot tube gets blocked, the airspeed indicator could drop to zero, even if the plane's still flying.
Oh, okay. Now that sounds scary.
Yeah.
What about the other instruments? Are they affected by blockages too?
For sure. If the static port gets blocked, it's like the altimeter suddenly freezes, stuck at whatever altitude the blockage happened. The vertical speed indicator would drop to zero too, giving this false sense that the plane isn't climbing or descending.
Oh.
It's like a chain reaction of misinformation. And that could lead to, you know, a really dangerous situation.
So those little pre-flight checks, they're even more important than I realized. But what about modern aircraft? Have, you know, digital systems changed how we deal with these potential failures?
Definitely. Modern aircraft, they've got these sophisticated systems like the Air Data Computer, or ADC.
Right.
It can process multiple streams of data to provide even more accurate readings and catch potential errors. Think of it like having a co-pilot that's always double-checking all the instruments, making sure they're giving you consistent information.
Oh, okay. So even if one sensor gets a funky reading, the ADC can cross-reference it with other data and maybe raise a red flag.
Exactly. It's like a built-in safety net that's always monitoring and verifying everything.
That's reassuring. It sounds like we've covered a lot of ground already.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much complexity goes into these systems that we take for granted, you know?
Yeah.
But before we move on, I have to ask about another fascinating aspect of flight instruments. Gyroscopes.
Ah, yes. The world of spinning wonders. They bring a whole new dimension to flight instrumentation, and they're key to how pilots maintain spatial orientation.
Okay, I'm intrigued. We'll have to dive into those in the next part.
Sounds like a plan. We'll uncover the secrets of those spinning marvels.
Yeah.
And we'll explore how they help pilots navigate the skies. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, everybody. Last time we were talking about the pitot-static system, the plane's way of, you know, feeling the air to figure out things like altitude and airspeed. But we left off talking about another fascinating aspect of flight instruments, gyroscopes.
Right.
Those sound a lot more complex to me.
They might sound complicated, but the principles behind them are actually surprisingly simple, and they're incredibly clever. Gyroscopes have these two key properties that make them perfect for flight instruments. One is rigidity in space.
Okay.
And the other is precession.
Okay, break that down for me. Rigidity in space.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're like super stubborn and they just refuse to move?
Yeah, pretty much. Imagine a spinning top. No matter how you kind of nudge or poke it, it wants to stay upright.
Right.
That's rigidity in space. So a spinning gyroscope wants to maintain its orientation no matter how the object it's attached to moves.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the plane is turning and tilting, the gyroscope inside an instrument wants to stay fixed.
So it's like having a tiny anchor of stability inside the plane, no matter how chaotic things get outside.
Yeah.
I can see how that would be pretty useful for pilots trying to maintain control.
Exactly. And that brings us to the second property, precession. Instead of moving in the direction of an applied force, a gyroscope actually moves at a right angle to that force, in the direction of its spin. It's like, pushing on a spinning bicycle wheel. The wheel won't move in the direction you're pushing. It'll tilt sideways.
Wait, so they're not just stubborn. They also react in unexpected ways. That's both cool and kind of mind-boggling.
It is a little mind-bending, but this strange behavior is what makes gyroscopes so useful for things like the heading indicator, the attitude indicator, and the turn coordinator.
Okay, so let's unpack these gyroscopic wonders one by one. Let's start with the heading indicator. You mentioned it's kind of like a compass, but better.
Yeah, think of it as a compass that's immune to the plane's movements.
Okay.
The gyro inside, it's mounted vertically, and because of that rigidity in space, it always wants to keep pointing in the same direction.
Okay.
Even if the plane turns or banks.
Mm.
So this gives the pilot a steady heading reference no matter what the plane is doing.
So it's like having a compass that's always perfectly level no matter how much turbulence you're flying through. That's a game changer for navigation.
Exactly. It makes it so much easier for pilots to maintain their course, especially in challenging conditions. But there's a catch. Remember how we talked about the Earth rotating?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that rotation actually affects the heading indicator over time.
Ah, right. The Earth is constantly spinning.
Yeah.
So even if that gyro wants to stay fixed, the ground beneath it is moving. Wouldn't that cause the heading indicator to drift?
You got it. That's why pilots regularly cross-check the heading indicator with a magnetic compass.
Okay.
They got to make adjustments to account for that drift. It's like recalibrating your navigation system to make sure you're still on the right track.
So even with these, you know, amazing gyroscopes, the trusty old magnetic compass still has a really important role to play. It's like having a backup map just in case your GPS goes haywire.
Yeah, exactly. Redundancy is super important in aviation. But let's move on to another really important gyroscopic instrument, the attitude indicator. It's also known as the artificial horizon.
Okay, artificial horizon. It sounds pretty important. What makes it so special?
The attitude indicator, this is a pilot's window to spatial orientation, especially when they can't see the real horizon, like if there's clouds or it's nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
It basically tells them the plane's pitch and roll attitude of, you know, relative to the horizon.
So it's like having a virtual horizon right there in the cockpit. Mm-hmm. That's incredibly helpful. But how does it actually work? Is there like a tiny little camera inside that's projecting an image of the horizon?
Not quite. It's all thanks to our friend the gyroscope again.
Okay.
But this time the gyro is mounted horizontally.
Okay.
Imagine a miniature airplane attached to this gyro.
Okay.
As the plane pitches up or down or rolls left or right, that miniature plane on the instrument stays level with the actual horizon.
Wow, that's clever. So even if the real plane is doing a barrel roll, the miniature air...
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
They're playing inside the instrument. Stays perfectly level, showing the pilot where the real horizon is. Talk about keeping a level head.
You got it. But even these amazing gyroscopes are affected by things like friction.
Right.
So how do you make sure that the gyro inside the attitude indicator stays perfectly upright and doesn't drift over time?
It's a good question. Is there some kind of tiny mechanic inside that's constantly adjusting it?
That's where the ingenuity of engineering comes in. It has a self-erecting mechanism.
Mm.
It uses these little pendulous vanes that sense any tilting of the gyro and apply a little corrective force.
Mm. Keeps it perfectly aligned.
So it's like a self-balancing system for the gyro. Amazing. But I've heard that older attitude indicators had some limitations. What's the deal with that?
You're right. Older attitude indicators could tumble if the plane exceeded certain bank or pitch angles.
Okay.
Imagine the gyro inside suddenly flipping over.
Oh, no.
It makes the instrument useless and potentially disorients the pilot.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah. Thankfully, modern attitude indicators have safeguards in place to prevent this from happening.
Okay, good. They've really thought of everything.
Absolutely. Safety is paramount. Now, let's talk about the last gyroscopic instrument we're going to discuss today, and that's the turn coordinator.
Turn coordinator, it sounds like something that helps pilots make smooth turns. Am I on the right track?
You are. The turn coordinator is all about helping pilots coordinate their turns and avoid those kind of scary situations like skids and slips. Okay, remind me again about skids and slips. Those are the ones where the plane is kind of losing traction, right?
Think of it like driving a car. A skid happens when you turn too sharply and the car's rear tires lose grip. In a plane, it's when the aircraft is turning too quickly for its bank angle, like the tail's trying to overtake the nose.
Yeah. Mm.
A slip, on the other hand, happens when the aircraft is turning too slowly for its bank angle and the nose dips below the horizon.
Okay.
So the turn coordinator, it's like a little guardian angel, making sure you're staying balanced during turns and avoiding those out of control moments.
Okay. Oh.
It shows the rate of turn and whether the turn is coordinated or not.
Okay.
This helps pilots maintain that nice, smooth flight path.
It's amazing how these seemingly simple instruments, you know, based on these spinning gyroscopes, can make such a huge difference in flight safety and control. But I thought we were done with the magnetic compass. We already talked about the heading indicator, right?
Yeah. But you know those sophisticated gyroscopic instruments we were just talking about?
Yeah.
Well, remember what we said about redundancy. The magnetic compass is still a super important backup instrument.
Right. Because even the most advanced technology can fail.
Exact.
But aren't magnetic compasses prone to errors?
That's a great point. And it leads us to a whole other area of discussion, compass errors.
Okay.
And how pilots navigate them.
I'm ready to dive into those compass complexities.
All right. We'll unravel those mysteries and we'll talk about how pilots use magnetic compasses effectively, even with their quirks.
All right.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back, everyone. Last time we were exploring the fascinating world of gyroscopes and how those spinning wonders help pilots navigate the skies. But we left off talking about magnetic compasses and, you know, their tendency for errors.
Right.
Let's unravel those mysteries.
Yeah, magnetic compasses, they might seem simple, but they definitely have some quirks that pilots need to be aware of. One of the biggest challenges is the difference between true north and magnetic north.
Okay. True north versus magnetic north. Remind me about that again.
Yeah.
Isn't true north like based on the Earth's axis of rotation?
Yeah.
Well, magnetic north is based on the Earth's magnetic field.
That's right.
They don't quite line up.
Exactly. It's like imagine you're going on a road trip and you're using a compass to navigate.
Okay.
But your compass is slightly off. It's pointing a few degrees away from true north.
Okay.
You could end up miles away from your destination if you don't account for that difference.
So it's like having a map where north is slightly skewed. You might think you're heading in the right direction, but you're slowly veering off course.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. In aviation, this difference between true north and magnetic north is called variation.
Okay.
And it changes depending on your location. It's marked on aeronautical charts. And pilots need to factor in this variation when they're using the magnetic compass to navigate.
So it's not just about following the compass needle blindly. Mm-hmm. Pilots have to do some mental math to adjust for this variation.
That's right.
Makes sense. But it definitely adds a layer of complexity.
It does.
Are there any other factors that can kind of throw off the compass?
Absolutely. Another common one is called deviation. And this is caused by magnetic fields generated by the aircraft itself. We're talking like the engine, electrical wiring, even metal parts. All these things can deflect the compass needle, making it point in the wrong direction.
So the plane itself is messing with its own compass. That's kind of ironic.
Yeah, it is.
How do pilots deal with that? Do they just have to, like, guesstimate?
Luckily, there's a more precise way to deal with it. Most aircraft have what's called a compass correction card.
Okay.
And it shows the amount of deviation for different headings. So pilots use this card to adjust their compass readings. You can think of it kind of like calibrating the instrument.
Right.
To account for the plane's own magnetic interference.
So it's like having a cheat sheet to decode the compass's whispers.
Exactly.
Are there any other compass quirks that pilots need to be mindful of?
Yeah, especially when they're flying near the poles. You know, as you get closer to the poles, the Earth's magnetic field lines, they start to dip downwards. And this causes the compass to tilt, which can lead to errors, especially during turns.
Wait, flying near the poles? Don't most commercial flights avoid those regions?
Yeah, you're right. Most commercial routes don't go directly over the poles.
Okay.
But aircraft operating in polar regions, like research planes or some military aircraft, they need to be really careful about these dip errors.
Okay, so these polar flights add a whole other layer of complexity to using the compass.
For sure. It's like navigating with a compass that's slowly going haywire. But thankfully, pilots are trained to recognize and compensate for these errors, even in those really challenging environments.
Wow. It's amazing how much expertise goes into using something as seemingly simple as a magnetic compass. It's clear that pilots really need a deep understanding of these instruments, you know, even with all the advanced technology we have today.
Definitely. And you know, while digital systems have revolutionized aviation, these more classic instruments, they still play a super critical role, especially as backups. Remember, redundancy is key.
Oh, yeah. Like having a scare tire, or in this case, like a standby altimeter or a compass.
Right.
It's all about having a plan B
right.
when you're thousands of feet in the air.
Exactly. And that actually brings us to another layer of safety in modern aircraft, and that is the standby flight instrument system. Think of it as a pilot's lifeline, you know, just in case the primary instruments fail.
Okay.
It's this compact unit that provides all that essential flight information, altitude, airspeed, attitude, and heading, all that stuff. Even if the main systems go down.
So it's like a mini cockpit all on its own, ready to take over if the main instruments go kaput.
That's a great way to put it. And here's the really cool part. It has its own independent sensors, processors, even power sources. It's not reliant on the main aircraft systems at all.
Wait, so even if a plane loses all electrical power, this standby instrument can still keep running? That's incredible.
It's designed to be that last line of defense, providing pilots with the information they need for as long as possible. One popular example is the Aspen Evolution flight display. It's become a staple in both general aviation and some commercial aircraft as well.
Aspen Evolution, that sounds familiar. It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It does sound pretty futuristic. It can display a whole range of data, including altitude, airspeed, GPS information, and even engine parameters. It really is like a mini glass cockpit.
Okay, I'm impressed. But how does it stay powered if the main electrical system fails? Does it run on like magic or something?
It's not magic, but it's pretty close. It's got multiple power sources.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about the aircraft's alternator, the main battery, an emergency battery, and it even has an internal battery. It's like a fortress of power. It's all about making sure those pilots have that vital information no matter what.
That is really incredible. It's just amazing how much thought and engineering goes into ensuring safety in aviation. It's like they've anticipated every possible scenario and built in like layers upon layers of redundancy.
They really have. And you know, it's not just about backup instruments. It's also about improving the reliability of existing systems. Remember those pitot tubes and static ports?
Oh yeah, those tiny little holes that are so important.
Exactly. Well, modern aircraft, they have ways to try and prevent those blockages. For example, heated pitot tubes. They use heating elements to keep ice from forming over those openings. And some aircraft, they even have alternate static sources. So pilots can actually switch to a different static port if the primary one gets blocked.
So it's like having a backup air intake for the instruments. Pretty clever. It seems like these aviation engineers are always thinking one step ahead.
They really are.
But is there anything kind of on the horizon that's going to revolutionize flight instruments even further?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. Aviation is always evolving, and there are some really exciting developments on the horizon.
Okay, I'm all ears. What kind of futuristic flight tech are we talking about? Like flying cars with holographic dashboards?
Well, maybe not flying cars just yet.
Okay.
But we are getting closer to some pretty amazing advancements. One area that's really generating a lot of excitement is what's called synthetic vision.
Synthetic vision. What is that exactly?
Imagine a system that can see through fog, clouds, even darkness.
Okay.
Synthetic vision uses sensors, databases, and computer graphics to create a real-time 3D view of the world outside the aircraft, even in really low visibility conditions.
Wait, so it's like giving pilots X-ray vision. They'll be able to see everything no matter what the weather's like.
It's not quite X-ray vision, but it's getting pretty close. Synthetic vision systems can display terrain, obstacles, runways, even other aircraft, all overlaid on this really realistic picture of the environment. It's like having a virtual window that shows you everything, no matter what the visibility is like.
That is mind-blowing. It really does sound like something straight out of a sci-fi movie, but it's actually real. So how does it work?
It uses all sorts of different sensors, things like radar, infrared cameras, GPS, to gather information about the surrounding environment. And then really powerful computers process all that data and display it on these high-resolution screens right there in the cockpit.
It's like having, like a super-powered version of Google Maps for pilots.
Exactly.
I can definitely see how that would be a total game-changer for safety, especially when the weather is bad.
It really has the potential to significantly reduce the risk of accidents just by giving those pilots a much clearer picture of what's around them, no matter what the weather's doing.
That is amazing. It sounds like the future of flight is all about enhancing situational awareness and giving pilots as much information as possible.
It really is. And another big thing along those lines is the use of head-up displays, or HUDs. They project all that critical flight information, things like altitude, airspeed, heading, all that stuff, right onto the windshield.
So instead of looking down at the instruments, pilots can see all that data right in front of them, like basically superimposed on their view of the world.
Exactly. That way, they can keep their eyes focused on the most important thing, which is flying the plane, and they don't have to constantly switch their focus back and forth.
That's super cool. It's like having a fighter jet cockpit in a commercial airliner. Are these HUDs actually being used in any aircraft right now?
Yeah, you actually see them pretty commonly in military aircraft. And you're starting to see them more and more in commercial airliners, too. As the technology gets better and more affordable, I think you're going to see HUDs popping up in a lot more cockpits.
It seems like the future of flight instruments is all about giving pilots, like, superhero vision and awareness.
Well, maybe not quite superhero vision, but it definitely is about making flying safer and more efficient. From those basic principles of pressure and gyroscopes to all these new digital systems and really futuristic concepts like synthetic vision, it's incredible how much ingenuity has gone into keeping us all safe in the air.
I agree. This deep dive has been a really incredible journey, exploring this world of flight instruments and uncovering all the science and the engineering and the human creativity behind it all. I started this knowing very little about how planes actually stay up in the air.
Yeah.
And now I kind of feel like I could hold my own in a conversation with a pilot.
That's great to hear. And you know what? Knowledge really is power. Understanding these instruments not only makes us all more informed passengers, but also helps us appreciate these amazing achievements in aviation.
Yeah, absolutely. So next time you're on a flight, you know, maybe take a moment to think about all those amazing instruments that are working behind the scenes to get you to your destination safely. And maybe just imagine a future where pilots can see right through those clouds thanks to all these advancements.
That's a great thought. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, safe travels.